Hi, everyone. My name is Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. And thank you so much for the invitation here to be with you today. And thank you, Matt, for everything you've done and reaching out to me. It's a great privilege and a great honor to be asked to speak here, and it's one that I don't take lightly, you know. And, you know, we have thousands of people here from all over the world, and someone said to me, hey, Paul, you know, are you not nervous? Or how does this not go to your head? And I said, you know what? Alcoholics Anonymous has a way of keeping you humble. A case in point, I was at a meeting one time, and a guy came up to me, and he says, is your name Paul? I said, yeah. He said, the Irish guy. I said, that's me. He goes, I just want you to know that you saved my life. So right away, my ego woke up, and I said to the guy, hey, please, tell me all about it. You know, take your time so you don't leave anything out. He said, I'll tell you what was happening. I was on a car trip, and my wife and my mother-in-law were in the back of the car, and they were arguing and bickering and going back and forth. And I said, I couldn't take it anymore. And he said, I always keep CDs in my glove box in my car. And I reached in, and I just grabbed the first CD that came to my hand, and I stuck it into the car, and it was you speaking. Now, this is what I think he's going to say. I think he's going to say, Paul, when your voice started to emanate around that car, that car was filled with a sense of serenity and peace and goodwill to all man. I thought he was going to say, Paul, actually, the car started to lift itself off the road and it felt like it was floating down the road. In fact, I'll tell you, Paul, the sunroof opened up and a white dove landed in the car and there was a voice that said, this is my son, Paul, who I'm well pleased. But what he actually did say, he said, I put your CD in. And within 5 minutes, I turned around, and my wife and my mother-in-law were fast asleep in the back of the car. And he turned around and walked away, and I'm standing there. So A has always got a way of keeping you humble, you know. And I mean, it's great to be asked here to speak once, but this is the second time I've been asked here to speak, you know. What an honor. And they had other people lined up to speak this weekend, but they wanted them to experience the full experience, like in the photographs they've been showing, you know, the gatehouse and the hospital and King's School. So they asked those guys and gals to come back next year. So they reached out to some people who had spoken there before. And lucky enough, fortunately, I was one of them. So we're like almost the spiritual reruns, you know. We're like, right now this weekend, we're like the Gilligan's Island of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So you've heard me speaking before. Please bear with me, you know. But it's a great honor and a great privilege to be here. I love the fact that we're here, thousands of people from all over the world, and we've got one common problem and one common solution called Alcoholics Anonymous. And James Joyce, the Irish writer, he's got a great line from one of his books, and he's talking about Dublin, but it's so indicative of Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, here comes everybody. And that is Alcoholics Anonymous. You look around, we're all here. Gender, color, creed, it doesn't matter. What's the old joke? Alcoholics Anonymous is the only place in the world that you can walk in a room full of strangers and start reminiscing. Because we might know each other personally, but when you say an alcoholic, I know enough about you. I know you've experienced terror and frustration and bewilderment and despair. I know you put a drink to your lips as the tears roll down your face and you drank it anyway. I know that friends and family and loved ones pleaded with you not to drink. And for goodness sake, in my case, at the end of my drinking, I drank against my own will. I know that because I'm an alcoholic, and I know that because you tell me you're an alcoholic. But when we speak here, we speak the language of the heart. And what is that language? We all experience great suffering getting here, and we've all experienced great love since we got here. And that's a universal language, and it overcomes all the barriers and language and whatnot, and we're here together like was just read there on this road of happy destiny, one alcoholic walking together with another one. I'll be honest with you. I never took my sobriety for granted. Every morning I wake up very grateful to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I took AA for granted. I just thought like AA has always been here. It's like the US mail or oxygen. It's always been here. And then you hang around Alcoholics Anonymous and you realize what a miracle Alcoholics Anonymous really is. And I feel so blessed to be born in a time and a place that has Alcoholics Anonymous, but I've been born in that 85-year window. Because for people like us, there's not a glossary of options. you go to a jail, you go to an institution, or you go to a graveyard. And the sad thing about disease, by the time I'm actually graveyard dead, I've been dead mentally and spiritually and emotionally for years. And anybody who mattered in my life is long, long gone. Because that's what we do to people. We squeeze and we squeeze till they say, go away and drink, or go away and don't drink. But you got to go. And here we are in Alcoholics Anonymous because of these men we've been talking about, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. There was a place for me to walk into in the worst night of my life and be given the grace not to drink. And it's so much more than grace. It's mercy. And the definition of mercy that I like the best is a complete reversal. The definition of mercy I like the best is entering into the chaos of another person's life. And that's what you did for me in August of 1992. When everybody in my life was going this way, the only people coming this way was Alcoholics Anonymous. And we're all miracles here today. I know we throw the word miracle around a lot, but what is a miracle? In my book, a miracle is a complete reversal or upheaval of the laws of nature. It's in my nature to be lying drunk somewhere right now on a Saturday afternoon, and I'm not. Now, how did that happen? It didn't happen because of me. It happened because of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the last thing I tried, and the first thing that ever worked. I'm not here to sell AA in the next hour. It's a program of attraction, not promotion. But what I will tell you, and I don't mean cash and prizes, you cannot get where I am today from where I came from without Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an impossible journey. And why do I continue to come to Alcoholics Anonymous? I know how the movie goes, but I wouldn't miss it to see somebody else walking in on the worst night of their life and be given the grace not to drink. There was somebody at the door for me. I better be there at the door for somebody else. For that, I am responsible. You know, there's an old saying in there, you show me the most grateful person in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll show you somebody that's not half grateful enough. And that's the case with me, you know. And you think about it, the story of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you were to write down the story of AA in a novel and send it to a publisher, they would send it back to you saying, rejected, too far-fetched. Because when you think about it, who would have thought that a broken-down, practically unemployable stock speculator and a doctor who had drank his business into the ground, that those two men would start the greatest spiritual movement in the history of human civilization for the treatment of alcoholics and alcoholism on a one day at a time concept. It's unbelievable, but that's exactly what happened. And if you look over the course of human history, you will see that God has taken ordinary people and worked with them and worked through them so that they could do extraordinary things. And that's exactly what happened with Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith. You know, people say, oh, well, if it hadn't have been Bill and Bob, it would have been John and Jim or Judy and Jill. But it wasn't. It was Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith. They're the guys that done it. For thousands of years, there's been people like me, couldn't fit in, ran at life with drink, ran away from life with drink. We were society's first outcasts. And because of those two men, you know, in the old space race, they would use this term when the rockets or the spaceships or space shuttle was coming back into the Earth's atmosphere. They would use that term. They had to hit the Earth at exactly the Earth's atmosphere at exactly the right angle, or they would skim off into space. And they called that angle a window of opportunity. And there was a window of opportunity in the spring of 1935. And Bill Wilson stepped through it and took Dr. Bob with him. And we can trace this moment in time back to that moment in time, you know. And everybody here, I love the effect of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether you're here today with one day or you're here with 50 years or 60 years, everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous has worth and value because this is God's economy. And in God's economy, everyone has worth and value. And we share your experience, strength, and hope, whether you're sober one day or 60 years. And the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, this program, with God working through it, will meet you exactly where you are. You don't have to meet Alcoholics Anonymous. it'll meet you exactly where you are. There's a friend of mine, and he's on this call, I believe, a dear friend of mine, Bob, and he tells a powerful story. He was sitting at a meeting over in Brooklyn here, which is not too far from me. And the meeting was going on about 20 minutes. And lo and behold, this woman came in. And she was visibly drunk. And she stumbled about and the meeting stopped. And someone went over to her and said, "Excuse me, the meeting's in progress. You're more than welcome to be here. Why don't you sit down? Here's a half cup of coffee for you. And someone will talk to you after the meeting." So the meeting goes back on ahead again. And lo and behold, about 20 minutes later, a guy comes in and he's visibly drunk. And by happenstance, or maybe not by happenstance, what's the old saying? Is it odd or is it God? He sits directly across from this woman who had just arrived 20 minutes earlier. Now she's sober 20 minutes. And she gets up and goes and gets him a cup of coffee and comes back and gives him the half cup of coffee and says, "If you sit quietly and drink your coffee, someone will come and talk to you after the meeting." I mean, that's the personification of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the very essence of Alcoholics Anonymous. She was sober 20 minutes, and her experience, strength, and hope was sit quietly, drink your coffee, and someone will talk to you after the meeting. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, if that's not Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know what is. That's the AA that I am so proud to be a member of here today. And I see when all this went down and we couldn't have our regular physical meetings, right away, contempt prior to investigation. I'm thinking, how's this Zoom going to work? I got to sit knee to knee with another alcoholic. I got to look across the room and see an alcoholic with skin on. And as usual in my life, I was 100% wrong, because Alcoholics Anonymous, I am so proud, because the world threw whatever it had at us and we took it and we just keep on going. We just keep on going down that broad highway. We find some way of making this work. We find some way of carrying this message to the still sick and suffering alcoholic, whether it be, now we're into a virtual room. There's people getting sober right now who have never even sat in a regular organic type meeting, and they're getting sober. Is it an alternative? No, but it's what God is asking us to do right now, and we're stepping up and not complaining about it. We're making it work. And I love that aspect of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in fact, far from being, I thought this was the worst thing that could happen to AA, this has actually turned out to be AA's finest hour. The way that we have stepped up and found a way to keep making this thing work with one alcoholic helping another. Because the disease hasn't changed. I'm living here, Rockaway Beach. I guarantee you, if I walked up the block that I live on right now, I'll find somebody drinking themselves to death right now. Totally oblivious to Alcoholics Anonymous. And what's our job? To keep that door open, even if it's a virtual door, for the still sick and suffering alcoholic. And like talking about the things we're talking about all weekend and these traditions that told me in AA, if you can't leave AA a better place than the way you found it, well, at least leave it the same for that person out there who's drinking themselves to death, who woke up this morning without a choice. I woke up this morning with a choice, and I got to leave that door open so that person will find one day where they will have a choice. Like that iconic Don McLean song, I know I'm dating myself here. I don't want to be here the day the music died. You go to the door and it doesn't open and someone says, the music doesn't play anymore. It used to play, but it doesn't play anymore. There was a guy that used to speak that passed away, and he used to say from the podium, this is on our watch. When he first said it, I was a bit jarred, and then I realized that's exactly true. This is on our watch now. And I don't want AA to go down on my watch. And I see the way this has been going this weekend. What do we say in our tradition? AA ought not to be organized. Well, it's pretty organized this weekend. And thank God for it, to reach out to all over the country and all over the world, one alcoholic helping another. And I feel very, very blessed for that. And When you think about it, I mean, I'm a bit of an AA nerd. I've stood outside that hospital. It's not a hospital today. It's an apartment building up in Central Park West where Bill Wilson got sober on December 11th, 1934. And I've stood outside that building. And I don't know what happened in that building, but something happened. It was a change that changed everything. And we know in our history, you know, his dear friend, Abby Thatcher, had visited him. And they went through the Oxford Group six-step program. And Bill Wilson, that night on December 11th, had this beautiful first experience. And he had this thought. He had this, I believe, a divinely inspired thought. And he thought to himself, surely there must be other people out there like me. I wonder if my experience could help them. And he had a vision or a thought or an idea of a chain of drunks, not just around New York or the Northeast, around the world, like which is on this meeting right now. One drunk helping another, chain-like. And that's what I ask myself in my daily meditation. How strong is my link in the chain? Is it strong to the people that went ahead of me? And more importantly, is it strong to the people coming behind me? If someone was one day at a virtual meeting says to me, Paul, can I comprehend the word serenity? Can I know peace? Can I stop drinking one day at a time? Absolutely walk this journey with us, because we do together what I can't do alone, and that's not drink one day at a time. And even before Bill Wilson left that hospital, he asked if he could talk to the other patients. I mean, the jokes write themselves. You can just imagine, you know, the guy that owned the hospital, Charlie Towns, is saying, you mean the guy that's been detoxed here three times, just and the third time just recently, he wants to talk to the patients? And it says in our literature, with serious misgiving, they allowed it to happen. We didn't have a 12th step, but Bill Wilson was practicing the principles of the 12th step before he even left that hospital. If Bill Wilson waited till he was sober a year before he tried to reach out to Dr. Bob, we'd all be dead today. Now, we didn't have a 12th step, but he was trying to practice the principles. I wonder, by helping you, will I be able to stay sober myself? And that's so true in my life today, even in this virtual world, finding a way of still doing service in Alcoholics Anonymous, staying tethered, connected to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you know, what's the alternative? The alternative is I'm working an 11-step program. An 11-step program for a guy like me is nothing more than a self-help program. It's a highly evolved self-help program, but it's all about me. That 12th step completes the spiritual circuit. I need you, and you need me, and that's okay by me. As my dear friend Liz B., the first African-American woman to get sober in AA in 1952, still alive and well and doing well, spoke at Bill Wilson's 20th anniversary, and she would always say when she was talking, without you, there's no me. And that is so true in Alcoholics Anonymous. If I'm doing AA alone, I'm not doing AA. There's a friend of mine who says it's BB. I said, what's BB? He says, I don't know, but it's not AA. It's hard telling jokes on Zoom, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you're not really sure of any. It's almost like telling jokes in the graveyard at midnight. You're not really sure if anybody's laughing, you know? But that is so true. And Bill Wilson, to his credit, started working with trying to find other alcoholics to work with. And I used to discount the non-alcoholic. What do they know? Boy, we would not be where we are today if it wasn't for the non-alcoholics who have been great friends of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the list is endless, you know. And one of the first times that became apparent, Bill Wilson went around New York City for 6 months. And some of the people looked into it, and they reckon he tried to help almost 100 people. And he never got one person sober. And he went to his wife, Lois, and he says, Lois, I don't know. Maybe I've got this thing wrong. I was so sure this was the way to do it. But I've been going up and down Manhattan for 6 months, and I haven't got one person sober. And she looked at him and stated the obvious that he couldn't see. Bill, you're still sober. What's the old saying? When you're inside the jar, you can't read the label. She's standing outside the jar, and she could see it clear as day. Bill, you're still sober. And then he goes back to Dr. Silkworth, another non-alcoholic. And he says to Dr. Silkworth, and Dr. Silkworth says, Bill, I know you had that beautiful, grand, spiritual experience down in that room. And I don't know what happened, but I told you to hang on to it. But you're trying to transmit that to other alcoholics. You're going to a guy or a gal on a park bench, and you're telling them about being on top of a mountain and the wind blowing through you. That's just, you can't transmit that. He says, why did you hit them with the 1-2 punch that puts every alcoholic on the ropes? The obsession that gets you drinking and the allergy that keeps you drinking once you start. And that's exactly what he did. Armed with these new facts, he went to Akron. And we know the story, just Mother's Day weekend. And the deal fell through and he reached out to Dr. Bob. And he didn't talk from the spiritual hilltop about what happened back in the hospital. He looked at Bob and he says, did you ever find yourself drinking when you didn't want to drink? Yeah, yesterday. Did you ever tell yourself you're just going to have a couple and you can't step? Yeah, yesterday. And the two men talked to each other. And Dr. Bob, he must have been a humble guy, because he didn't say to Bill Wilson, you're going to tell me what's physically wrong with me? I've got more letters after my name than you can shake a stick at. I went to Ivy League colleges. What are you, a stock speculator? Dr. Bob, in his humility, said to Bill, and he says it in the story, he talked my language. And not because he had read it in a book anywhere. Our most prized possession, identification. When you talk about you, I find out about me. As I said earlier on, when you see an alcoholic, I don't need to know one more thing about your backstory. I know everything about you that I need to know. And those two men would get together and Dr. Bob would drink one more time. And Bill Wilson, to his credit, didn't say, I'll forget this guy. I'm going back to New York. He stayed with Dr. Bob. He sobered him up. And Dr. Bob said those beautiful words the last morning he drank. I'm going to do this thing. And those two guys would start the greatest spiritual movement, as I said, in the history of human civilization, for people like me. At the worst night of my life, there was a place for me to go to. And maybe you're out there today and you're new and you're saying, Paul, you know, these 12 steps and 12 traditions, we have a symbol in AA. And I believe there's three parts to it. Unity, service, and recovery. And I believe in your very first meeting, even if this is a virtual first meeting today that you're at, you can put all three parts of that triangle into your life. Unity. We do together what I can't do alone. Many meetings make it easy. Few make it hard. None make it impossible. I need you and you need me. There's one lifeboat called Alcoholics Anonymous. Even if it's a virtual one, it's none of my business who's sitting next to me. That's God's business. It is my business if I'm willing to help that person or be helped by that person. So simple. I drink, we stay sober, case closed. Service, there's a guy that used to speak that passed away, would say, the highest paid grade in Alcoholics Anonymous is servant. And I have to do that, find somewhere, because by the nature of this disease, I'm shackled to self. My holy trinity is always me, me, me. So I got to find some way of doing service in AA. We used to say, if you put away one more chair than the one you sat on, congratulations, you're doing service. But find some way of doing service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And recovery, maybe those 12 steps seem like a foreign concept. We have slogans in AA. The easy does it. Live and let live. One day at a time. They're like the banisters to the steps. I'm here to tell you from personal experience, not in the theoretical. You can stay dry in two parts of the triangle. I've done it. You can even stay dry in one part of the triangle. I've done that too. But if I want to get free from the one person I could never get free from, which is me, and live in the one place I could never live, which is right here, right now, I got to put all three parts into my life. And I got to do it every day. But it's a small price to pay for the life that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. I was in Las Vegas one time, and I was in Caesar's Palace, and I don't gamble, but I like to watch, you know? I remember you see those guys on TV playing Texas Hold'em, and they're off in a side room, and I was watching, and the guy gets up with all his chips, and he puts all his chips in the middle of the table, and he says, "I'm all in." And I thought to myself, what a great metaphor for Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to be all in, and I got to be all in every day, because the disease of alcoholism is all in, and it's every day. But it's a small price to pay for the life that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. It is the only place I know in the world where you get the ability to live two lives in one lifetime. That guy didn't move back down because I'm sober. People will say, oh, my disease is in the parking lot doing push-ups. Not my disease. It's been at every meeting I've been at. It's heard everything I've heard. And it just wants to get me off the beam. Very rarely does somebody take a 180 turn out of AA. It's usually a drift, a glacial drift. And you drift away. And then one day you wake up and you've got nothing between you and the first drink. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous today, I don't know about tomorrow, I have something between me and the first drink. If you're new, that's what AA gave me that I can never thank them enough for. They give me something between me and the first drink. You hear that metaphor, people have said, you go 10 miles into the forest, you got to go 10 miles out. I don't believe that in AA. For the people that are new, maybe not so new, I don't care how deep and how dark and how painful that force you're in seems, it tells me, and I'll tell you, you're just 12 steps away from a new life. That's all. Just 12 steps away from a brand new life in Alcoholics Anonymous. People come to me and they go, oh, I came to AA and I got my life back. I don't want my life back. It sucked. I had it for 30 years. I'm going to do nothing with it. I got a whole brand new life in Alcoholics Anonymous. Are there people in my life from the old drinking days? Absolutely. But things are different today. Like the movie says, before I was lost on a sea of booze. And if there was any coordinates, there was pain and misery. And every once in a while, I'd wash up on dry land. Alcoholics were great starters, get things going again. But everything was always built on sand. And the first drink would always arrive because I had nothing between me and the first drink. And I would find myself drinking again, washed out to more, out to sea with more debris than the last time. Not anymore. People say, oh, you're just an arm's length away from a drink. I suppose technically that's true. Right here, right now. I don't know about tomorrow. I'm 12 steps away from a drink. And that's a long way from when I first walked in here. But don't get me wrong. They're not 12 steps up to anything. They're 12 steps down to humility. I seen people drink again in AA that I thought would never drink again. That tells me it's a daily reprieve, not a pardon. And the only way that I coast in AA is downhill. So a friend of mine got drunk after a long time in AA. He said, you know how you get drunk in AA? You give those steps back one step at a time. Take your will back in three. Become insane in two. So insane you tell yourself you're not an alcoholic and get drunk on the first step. Today, I don't know about tomorrow, I'm in that safe place to talk about. I'm so glad that I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I found out all I ever really needed to know. That my name is Paul and I'm an alcoholic. Because that tells me who I am and what I am and where I am and what I need to be doing. And if I know that, I'm all right. And when I'm all right, everything around me is all right too. Even if it's not. What do the Jesuits say? All is good. When I'm okay, all is good. And AA allows me to be okay with myself one day at a time. And I found out, you know, you took me, I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous on August of 1992, and you took me and I found out what my problem was, that I was an alcoholic, that I got a body that won't let me drink, and a mind won't let me stop. That one drink is a thirst I can't quench. That when I control my drinking, I don't enjoy it. And when I enjoy my drinking, I can't control it. With your help, I haven't had a drink since August of 1992. One drink today, destination unknown. And you took me from a place of powerlessness and unmanageability through those steps to a place, not where I'm powerful, a place where access to power, a spiritual awakening, and what used to be not important is, and the vice versa. And I'm sitting here today. And what's the key to success in Alcoholics Anonymous? The program guarantees you a spiritual awakening. It's been my experience that the key to success in AA is to stay awake. It's so easy to fall asleep in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially when you've been here a while. And just like driving a car, you don't have to be asleep for a long time for something really bad to happen. But today, because of these people, this program, this fellowship, I'm awake and I'm alert and I'm grateful to be a sober member of AA. Now, why am I an alcoholic? I used to get a lot of mental gymnastics, you know. Why did I become an alcoholic? Where did I become an alcoholic? When did I become an alcoholic? You know, the old alcoholic conundrum. What came first, the chicken or the keg? You know, a lot of guys that get drunk trying to figure that one out. I just accept the fact that I'm an alcoholic. I mean, if God came down out of the New York sky here this afternoon and told me exactly why I'm an alcoholic, nothing would really change in my life. Hopefully, I'd wake up tomorrow morning, say my prayers, reach out, make calls, take calls, go to meetings and so forth. But if I was to speculate, there's been two turning points in my life. The first one was taking a drink of alcohol, and the second one was walking in the meeting of AA. On both times, I was looking for the same thing. You know, Carl Jung, that was a great friend of AA, said that alcoholism can be characterized as a low-grade spiritual thirst. And I don't realize that, but I took that first drink, 14 or 15 years of age. The stone came out of the shoe, the knot came out of the stomach. I was able to scratch an itch that I couldn't reach for years. I'm filling in the holes I didn't even know I had. And my life went from black and white to color in one drink. I bartended the last 5 years drinking, and I bartended the first 12 in AA. Most people drink because what alcohol does to them. I drink because what alcohol does for me. Alcohol does something for me that it doesn't do for a normal or even a heavy drinker. One drink changes how I feel about me, you, and this. And when alcohol does that for me, I'm coming back for more. I don't care what the consequences are. I'm sure you hear at a meeting all the time, you won't have to be in AA very long, and you'll hear a story that goes like this. The first night I drank, I blacked out, I threw up all over the place, and I couldn't wait to do it again. And non-alcoholics will say, no, I'm not going to do it again. But we alcoholics nod our heads because we know that alcohol is doing something for us that we cannot do for ourselves. Filling in those holes, taking off those rough edges. I could be everything I think you want me to be. And for a chronic people pleaser with low self-esteem, it was a magic elixir. But it was a Faustian bargain. I made a deal with the devil. Booze will give you a lift. But if you'd have told me, I love that book, the Charles Dickens book, The Christmas Carol, and you have the ghost of the past and the present and the future. When I took that first drink at 15 years of age, if the ghost of my alcoholic future had tapped me on the shoulder and said, I want to show you something. Look in that window. You see that guy drinking around the clock against his own will? You see that guy who has quicksand stretched around him in all directions? You see that guy who's pushed away everybody who mattered in his life? That's you in 15 years. I'd have said, you're out of your mind. You must be thinking about somebody else. But that's exactly what happened. A rabicious creditor? In The Merchant of Venice, Shylock just wanted 1 pound of flesh. Not this disease. It'll take your job, your car, your partner, your spouse, your wife, the shirt off your back. But what it really wants is me 6 feet under. It'll settle for miserable, but what it really wants is death. This is a terminal disease. I mean, I don't know about other terminal diseases, but this disease will kill me stone dead with or without drinking my body. And it's a terrible way to live as an alcoholic, you know. We talk about in AA, you know, we talk about the terrible things that happen to us when we're drinking and the car crashes and people dying in their sleep. You know, we don't talk about it because it's hard to measure. George Eliot, the writer, says, it's never too late to live the life you're meant to live. And you know what the life for me would have been? I was drifting through life half drunk, no idea where I'm going or why I'm going there, just drifting along on a sea of booze. And what happens is nobody's seen you for a while, and then one day they kick the door in, and you're they're dead on the carpet, and your life came and gone. The unlived life. That's the life of an active alcoholic. The unlived life. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I went from an unlived life to a life well lived. And it is not too late to live the life you're meant to live before drink took you down a different road. For the people that are new here today, I want to tell you, and I mean this, and I bet my life on this on a daily basis, there's a miracle here with your name on it. Nobody can take it for you, and nobody can take it from you. Come up and get the life you're meant to live before drink took you down a different road. That's been my experience. And not cash and prizes, just an ability to be yourself. What's the old Oscar Wilde line from his book? He says he knew the price of everything and the value of nothing. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me things of real value. You know, and the people, why do I continue to come? The people I've met in AA, some of the greatest people. And I drank myself out of Northern Ireland. There's no quince I'm standing in America with an Irish accent. I was a runner, a long-distance runner, always looking for an outside fix for an inside job. And I got to New York, and I just, like Bill Wilson says, I went down the proverbial ski jump. And thank God, Alcoholics Anonymous intervened. I love that fact, you know, the most beautiful words in an AA qualification. And someone's telling their story, and it goes down and down. And then they say the most beautiful words, and then. I know God's come to the next sentence. Because there's not a person out there this morning, this afternoon, with more than 24 hours, that hasn't had an and then moment. And this was mine. I was sitting in an apartment on a terrible drunk. At this stage, I was a periodic alcoholic. Barroom drinking was a memory. I just locked myself in the apartment with as much booze as I could get my hands on, and to use a line from The Godfather, I would just go to the mattresses. And I'm on this terrible drunk, and a note come under the door, and it had two men's telephone numbers on it. And it said what I've been hearing since I was 15. Paul, you're a nice guy, but you drink too much. And I picked up the phone, which is totally alien to my personality. And I called this guy's number, a complete stranger. And he had been praying that I might call. And he came over to my apartment, him and this other guy. And they were from the old South Bronx group. And that group had a mantra: we don't give up on anybody. I'd give up on me, but they didn't give up on me. And they came to my apartment, if you want to call it that. I didn't go to Skid Row, but it looked like Skid Row. And I thought they were going to talk about my drinking. But they didn't. They told story after story of their own drinking. And then that beautiful thing happened, our most prized possession, identification. They talked about them, and I found out about me. And I said to myself, I put my head in my hands, almost like the man in the bed, and I said, I can't live this way anymore. And the guy says, Paul, this is your lucky day, because you don't have to live that way anymore. And I was too sick to get brought to a meeting. But 2 days later, I was strong enough to get put in a car and get brought to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's the greatest singular event in my life. I can't remember what was said at the meeting, who spoke or who didn't speak. But what I do remember is two men coming to me after the meeting, and they shook my hand and looked me straight in the eye. And they told me, Paul, if you want to stop drinking, you're in the right place. And we're not going to tell you that your life will get better, but if you stay here, you'll get better. And I walked out of that meeting that day, and someone met me who had heard it all before, hand on heart, promises, you know, Chris Christopherson and Sunday morning, coming down, never again, coming out of hospitals after convulsions and seizures, and drunk within 48 hours, and people go, what's with this guy? He's just going to have a hospital, he's drinking again. And I said to this person, I think I've found something. I didn't know what it was. I couldn't have articulated or described it, but I know today what it was. It was hope. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's hope in human form. People get people sober. God works through people and the spiritual conduit or the spiritual chain that he uses is a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I haven't taken a drink from that day to this day. I walked into the meeting one way and I walked out another. The longest I've ever off drink by myself was 6 weeks. And here since August of 1992 with your help. I'm not going to say that, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and everything was wonderful and I'd walk between the raindrops. Life's hard. That was one of the big lessons I had to learn. Life is hard and life is not fair. And early sobriety, all sobriety can be tough at times. And that roller coaster goes up and that roller coaster goes down. Just don't get off. Stay on. Ride it out. And that's been my experience, you know. And, you know, I remember going, thought I'd come into AA and put this program into my life. And the big mistake I made, I came into AA and I was doing unity. I was doing service. But I wouldn't do recovery. I wouldn't do the third part of the triangle. Irish, stoic, don't tell nobody nothing. I'm here to tell you, you can fool them with the coffee pot at 7:30 at night. But untreated alcoholism would come to visit me at 2 o'clock in the morning with the could'ves and the should'ves and the would'ves. I was carrying two hefty bags full of garbage around. I had a sponsor, but I wasn't using them. And I bottomed out. I've been at the jumping off place twice in my life. Once with drink and once with no drink and no program. A different type of pain, but pain nonetheless. And I bottomed out 2.5 years off drink, no program, on the Gowanus Expressway in New York here, a 6-lane highway. And I chased after a guy who cut me off. I jammed him against the guardrail. I'm blocking 3 lanes of traffic. This is 2.5 years off drink with no program. I go back to the car. There's an Asian man shaking behind the wheel. His wife's crying in the passenger seat. And his 3 kids are crying in the back of the car. I apologized and I drove to my sponsor's house and I told him what I just told you. And he says, Paul, how old were you when this happened? I said, how old? This happened 20 minutes ago. Maybe we're getting like lost in translation here, you know, we've got to get you hooked on phonics, the Irish version. He says, Paul, His Majesty the Bailey. He said, you've been tiptoeing around this program. He said, if you don't get into these steps, if you don't get into this program, if you don't get free from the guy you got to get free from, and live in the place you can't live, which is right here, right now. Your life's going to go on lived, and that's on you, my friend. And that's exactly what was my number. It was like he walked into my bedroom at 3 o'clock in the morning and pulled the covers off. He says, you're like a starving man at a spiritual banquet. There's all this food on offer, and you're living on bread and water. And against my better judgment, in fact, everything that's helped me in AA has been against my better judgment. I get into the cause and effects of my drinking. Is it nice to go through the steps and get a full knowledge of your condition? Absolutely. Is it nice to go through the steps and drop those rocks or hefty bags or whatever you want to call it? Absolutely. But for what purpose? What's our job description? Stay sober and help another alcoholic. And that's when my life caught on fire. When I turned around and tried to bring another man through the steps, great events came to pass. You know, I was able to get through difficult times. You know, I remember going through a divorce at 20 years sober. Another guy involved, don't put my head away. And my 9-year-old daughter would be crying herself to sleep saying, Daddy, I don't want to get divorced. And I go into the living room and say, oh my God, how come I didn't see this coming? I'm not a good AA-er. And thank God I didn't go through it alone. You know, you get a guy like me in trouble at 25 or 27 years sober, how can I go to my home group and tell them my life's falling apart right in the middle of AA? But I did it because I wanted to be free and I wanted to be sober. I didn't have to do a PowerPoint presentation, but I got to let people know what time of day it is in my spiritual world. Alcoholics Anonymous is a reality check on how your life's going today, not how I think it should go or I want it to go. How is the rubber meeting the road in my life today? And I share with that with men and women. And took actions I didn't want to take. It's easy to do what you want to do in AA. I got sober and stay sober doing things I don't want to do. Or more importantly, things I don't believe in. Why is getting on my hands and knees and praying for this guy going to help me? But that's what I did. And I remember I was asked to speak at a meeting. And I said to my sponsor, I'm not going. What have I got to offer? He says, what do you mean? I said, I'm 20 years sober and my life's falling apart right in the middle of AA. Who wants to hear that? He says, Paul, what do you think this is here? Rainbows and unicorns? And we go skipping down the road, the happy road of destiny, and nothing ever happens? This is life on life's terms. You go to that meeting tonight and you tell them how you're trying to practice these principles and all your affairs. How you're trying to practice these spiritual principles in a situation that seems unspiritual. Why don't you tell them how you're trying to take the high road, even though you don't want to take the high road? And that's what I did. And it wasn't pretty. But that's life on life's terms. And Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not looking for the escape hatch anymore. I'm living life on life's terms. And I love what Dr. Bob says in his story. He talks about he had his drinking privileges and God had to take them away. I love that fact. I'm like that too. You know, I don't, you know, somebody, oh, Paul, a new type of vodka come out, doesn't give you a hangover. I could care less. I had my drinking privileges and I abused them so badly. Just like Dr. Bob said in his story that God had to intervene. I look at a bottle of booze today, I might as well have a skull and crossbones on it. It's not for me. If you can drink, our hats are off to you. For me, this is the easier, softer way. And for me, it's not about the early days. It's about the last days. And when I think of the last days of my drinking, just like Bill Wilson and his story, it's always November. It's always bleak. And the rain's running down the window. And I'm sitting up in the apartment, drinking round the clock, against my own will. And I look out the window and I see people going that bad, doing the everyday stuff of life. And I want to be where they are, but I know I can't. And I'm sitting there, and I don't want to drink, but I've no choice but not to drink. And I put the bottle to my lips, reluctantly. And I think to myself, whatever happened to my life? How did it ever get this bad? And what I want when I drink, I want unconscious time. I'm drinking for unconscious time. Maybe if I can drink myself into a state of unconsciousness, the pain of living will stop for even a short period of time. That's what I think about. I don't romance booze anymore. That's where I'll go back to. The good old days, forget about it. It's the last days. That's where I'll go back. And if you come to my apartment, if you'd have went to my apartment that time, you would see a man dying. You would see a man dying before your very eyes. But if you came to my apartment this morning, you will see a man living. And I'm not saying a perfect life. You come to my apartment, you're not going to see perfection, so go next door. But you'll see life on life's terms. You'll see life and family and things are going on. And I got remarried and I got a beautiful two-year-old daughter. I know what you're thinking. You don't need to check your camera. I don't look old enough to have a two-year-old daughter. I get that all the time. But you come here today, you won't see perfection. But you'll see life on life's terms. Many times, I drop the ball many times. The words are going across the living room, and I'm trying to put them back in my mouth. And thank God for the program Alcoholics Anonymous, that I can always start over. Is it nice to have the pause button when agitated? Yes. But thank God for the reset button, where I can start my day over. I'll tell you something that happened in this apartment the very morning. My beautiful daughter Dodge is climbing all over me, and the dog is coming over with his toy, and he's dropped in front of me. And I'm getting annoyed. I'm living up my head, thinking about what I'm going to say today at 1:30. And I pushed the dog out of the way. I said, Hercules, go on out of the road. And I pushed him out of the way. And you could see his body language. And he cowered away. And he slinked and walked off. And immediately, the belly barometer went off. And I said to myself, oh my God, what did I talk to the dog that way for? And he's a rescue dog. We found him on the beach here. So what do? I didn't pause then, but thank God for the reset button. I hit the reset button. I know this may sound supercilious. I went down and I made amends to that dog. I hugged him and told him I was sorry for talking him that way, and I'll try better the next time. And I took him on his favorite walk. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. You come to my house today, you won't see a man dying, but you'll see a man trying to live by spiritual means, one day at a time. And I love the fact of Alcoholics Anonymous, that we get this start over and we get this do-over. And perfection is a dream and illusion. I'll get myself drunk. But don't get me wrong. Underachievement is not a virtue worth striving for. But thank God Alcoholics Anonymous meets me exactly where I'm at. And I drop the ball many times. Nothing beats a failure but a try. And that's all I've been guilty of, is I keep trying. And I love that about Alcoholics Anonymous. They're not standing with a clicker, counting every time I fall down. All they've ever done is reach out a hand and say, Paul, can I help you get back up again? What a fellowship. What a program. What a society of people, you know. And self-acceptance today. I'm Paul McQuaid, and I'm okay with that. That's who I'm comfortable with me today, you know. I'm not looking for an outside fix, but it's really an inside job. In the last few minutes here, I was reading. I get up early, and I'm sitting here one day before the pre-dawn hour, and I'm reading some spiritual literature. And there was a line from a poet, a Middle Eastern poet from the Middle Ages. And he said this line that just resonated with me. He said, out there, way out there, beyond good and bad, there is a garden. I will meet you there. That's where I want to live in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where these people live. We're not perfect. It's progress, not perfection. And we meet in that garden between good and bad. We're just alcoholics trying our best to stay sober one day at a time and move on down that happy road of destiny. We drop the ball many times. You know, we share with each other and we don't go through it alone. And I love that. Out there beyond good and bad, there's a garden. I will meet you there. You know, I'm the first person in my family to come into Alcoholics Anonymous. My brother's got about 22 years now back in Northern Ireland. The chain has been broken in my generation. I feel so blessed, as I said, that we have this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to keep the, you know, this thing going for the next 85, the next 185 years. Because, as I said, there's somebody in this block this morning who started their day off different with me, reaching for a drink rather than reaching for a Zoom meeting. You know, and I want to sum up with a couple of words that just sums up how I feel about you and how I feel about Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the Irish blessing, and I want to share it with you. How I feel about you and AA. And I don't want to speak for Rockaway Beach, but I will. I hope it's this talk that I give, wherever you are in the world today, it finds you safe and sober, and hopefully before too long, we'll be sitting knee to knee, elbow to elbow again. But the Irish blessing goes like this. May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face. And the rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Thank you so much, everyone. It's been a privilege to speak with you. Thank you, Matt. That's all I'll say.
All right. Thank you, Paul, very much. That was great. Fantastic. Thank all of you for being here and being a part of our virtual Founders Day. I know it's different. We're looking forward to next year seeing everybody in person again. But thank goodness that we were able to do this and you're all able to get together, whether it's virtual or not. So if you all help me close this meeting with the Lord's Prayer, the next meeting will be at 2:45. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Thank you.